Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Good morning, listeners. We are so glad you're with us. This is Jeannie, and I'm here with my friend, Maxine. And Maxine, I think this may possibly be my favorite author that we're interviewing today. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
Well,
yours too?
Boy, I would sure like it if that's the case. Thanks, friend.
You're so welcome.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How's your day going?
Well, so far so good. The sun is shining in Portland. The dog got a walk, and I'm sitting here at the computer, so all is well in the world right now.
And all the trees are pink, and the daffodils are yellow. I love that color combination.
Oh,
and the azalea,
beautiful.
I have an azalea that is just this shocking pink, and a pink tree not far from it, and the daffodils growing right up next to it. It just makes me want to go paint.
I know, and
I
came home.
You.
I've been away for a few days, came home, and my star magnolia is in full bloom. The cherry trees are blossoming. It's just gorgeous, the yellow daffodils.
It is gorgeous.
Beautiful.
And I'm probably going to the Dalles, which is a cherry tree capital along with Hood River of Oregon next week. So I should get to see all those orchards rolling over the hills with white blossoms. I can't wait. It's just beautiful.
Beautiful, beautiful. And the baby lambs are being born, too. That's what I saw on my travels. Lots of baby lambs and baby calves. But
and they're so white.
Spring is here.
Yeah.
Little bitty ones.
Well, listeners, today we're talking with, well, actually, we're still just talking together. And we're going to talk to Maxine about her new book, Mother's Fury, Releasing the Trauma of Childhood Abuse. Maxine is an author, and she's a life coach, and she's co-host, along with me, of this show. Currently, she also serves as president of the Oregon Christian Writers. She has a passion for helping others reach their God-given potential, and she's dedicated her time to writing and providing coaching to those who are seeking change. She's considered a valued resource for family members, well, members too, Maxine, don't you think?
Yes, that's
true. Yeah, and her tried and tested ideas can be found in magazines, blogs, and compilation books. Where'd you test your ideas, Maxine?
Oh, in many spots. It would be too difficult to try
like
to come
in
up
your own family
them.
Is where you've tested
well, a lot
them,
of them
we
are through small group studies as well. You know,
yeah.
People come and the coaching. And
sure.
There's been many ways that I've tried them and when I've tested them and people try them and they, lo and behold, they work.
And I know, and I went to a new Bible study one time sometime about a year ago, and they had one of your books, Blended Families, up on the shelf, face out, and I told them I knew you, and they were so impressed with me. So I'm important because I know you. Okay,
yes,
I'm going to give you a list of her books. Rebuilding Families, $1 at a Time, and she wrote that with her late husband, Charlie. He was a CPA. Blended Families, Creating Harmony as You Build Your New Home Life. The Blended Families Workbook, Raising Children in Blended Families, and she's as well a monthly columnist for the Christian Journal and the East County Gazette. But this new book is her pièce de résistance. It's Mother's Fury, Releasing the Trauma of Childhood Abuse. You know, Maxine, this mother was kind of worse than I knew mothers got. And how did you hear about her? What caused you to write about all angry mothers, and about this particular mother?
Well, this particular subject matter didn't cross my mind until I was filming some family programs in Southern Oregon, and one of the men on the cameras came off at a break when I was talking about fathers and mothers, and he said that was not my experience, and he began to show me the scars on his face from having
literal
bottles
scars.
Broken. Literal scars. And then he
wow.
began to talk about the emotional scars, and he was in tears, and I said, you know, if you want to write that out, write your story out, I might be able to help others change their lives too. So he began to write that out. I, in my case, did not grow up with an angry mother. She got mad once in a while, but she wasn't an angry, abusive mother. So I had not had that experience myself, and now I ran into a man who did have that experience, and it's more common than we suspect. It's very tragic because it leaves a lot of scars. But what I found was in him releasing his story, he began to feel the freedom from it. He says he started weeping over his pages. He says it's bringing it back, but there was a freedom in letting it out. It had been bottled up. So
I think we've all
that's
experienced
where it came
that,
from Charles that, Rice, and that's his story that, is that, told in the book.
The experience of talking to someone else, I don't know why that is. I think that's partly what God's talking about when he says bear one another's burdens. It's just such a relief so many times for all of us, I think. But Maxine, don't you think all moms get angry sometimes?
Oh, well, I know from my own experience all moms get angry because sometimes
yeah,
I got
too.
Angry with my children as
yeah.
they were growing up. But it wouldn't have occurred to me to thoroughly thrash them. Punish them some, yes, discipline.
Might have occurred
but
to
I
you,
would
but,
not
yeah.
have taken this to another
yeah.
level. And so there's
right.
there's discipline that's needed. And even if it's spanking, there's spanking that's done in a right way. And
yeah.
then there's the wrong form of discipline that takes place. And it's usually from a very angry mom.
You know, talk to the listener out there who listens to you and they think, oh, my gosh, am I that abusive mom or dad? How do they know the difference, whether they are
well,
or
they,
not?
Well, they can know the difference because they don't lose control. In becoming angry, anger is good if it leads to positive change. Anger is not good if it causes harm to the person on the receiving end of that anger, in this case, an innocent child. These children grow up knowing nothing but an angry mother in most cases. They can't trust this mother, even if she will put a bandage on a skinned knee or do something. They can't trust her to love them. So they grow up more in a state of dread than they do of feeling loved and safe in their own home. So if your children are, if you're angry at them once in a while, that's not a big deal. If you take away their TV privileges, that's not a big deal. If you
that's
start
maybe a
doing
good
like,
thing, huh?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But if you start doing like Charles Rice's mother did and bring out a belt every time and you wait for this child to come in the door just so you can wail on him, and then you starve him of food and you lock him in his room and you do all these horrible things that are very, very abusive, very wrong. They're very wrong. Then you can know you're crossing some lines. So challenge yourself, question yourself is what I would say to these moms. Where is my anger going wrong? Where is it going right?
And if you're leaving scars, chances are good you're not yes. going right. Yeah. Hey,
correct.
Maxine, do you have statistics that support the need to address child abuse?
Yes, and that's another reason that I wrote this, because the national statistics are kind of startling. It's nearly 5 children die every day in America from abuse and
oh,
neglect.
Oh, my word.
And the wow. children's advocacy centers around the country serve nearly 300,000 child victims of abuse, providing victim advocacy and support to these children and their families. And so that's a big number. That number needs to drop way down. Basically, I'd like to see it go to zero.
Oh, yeah.
You know, almost 700,000 were victims of maltreatment. 46 states reported approximately 3.3 million children received preventative services from Child Protective Services agencies in the U.S. Children younger than 1 year had the highest rate of victimization in the
this
national population
sick.
Of the same age. So it begins very early, and it's because their moms or the caregiver is not prepared for the crying of a small baby, maybe.
Yeah.
They're not used to that. They don't want to change diapers. They're not
ready. Well, and they're probably not feeling too well, and they're exhausted, and I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, I get but when they... Yeah.
No, it's not okay. But did Charles Rice ever kind of get the feeling that he was in danger of death? Would you say one child per day in the United States dies?
Five per day. Nearly five a day.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Die from it. That's a lot of children.
That's a lot of children. And did Charles, was it his feeling that he had been in danger of death from her?
Well, he has, in this story, there are incidents that he's reported, and he blacks out. He was definitely in danger. In fact, after what I've read of his story, it amazed me he lived to grow up because she was that abusive with him. Yeah.
So what happens to the children who are raised by furious mothers?
They grew up with a lot of emotional baggage that carries forward with them. They don't feel safe, and therefore when they enter into adult relationships, when they leave home, they don't know how to manage the crises that might arise in a normal relationship. They haven't got coping skills on board that are going to carry them through. Their personal relationships are damaged because they don't see anything normal happening in those while they're growing up in their own home. One of the worst problems I think a child can ever have is the lack of nurturing from a mother, because the mother is the number one person in a child's life that they feel an attachment to. They're in that womb. That's the person who's supposed to love them the most. But if they start being abused at a very early age, they don't grasp the fact that a mother can be loving. And so it puts scars. And as Charles Rice reported, flashbacks happen. When he thinks things are going along, something will trigger a flashback, and he'll go back and he'll be that child again. And so they have to come out of the trauma that's been left behind and realize that they were traumatized, they were victimized, but they were innocent.
Wow. You know, you don't hear very much about this, though, do you? I mean, why is that? Why is it kind of swept under the carpet a lot of the time?
Jeannie, my biggest perspective on that is that mothers are generally given the pass for being good. Mothers are seen as tender-hearted and nurturers and caretakers, and women are not perceived as being the bad guy. And so that's why I think there's that aspect to it, and then there's the shame of letting it out of the closet, so to speak. People don't want others to know. In Charles' case, it was secretive. He didn't want anybody to know what was happening at his house.
Do you think that's common, that the kids protect their parents?
I think it's more common than we're aware of because, number one, the parents will sometimes threaten them to be quiet.
Yeah.
And if they speak it out loud, they're in more trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think it's common because the parent... one of the interesting things with these type of parents, these moms, they can function with their job just fine. They hold jobs. This mother was a teacher. She came home. She has a PERS retirement. She was a teacher, but came home and was a terrible mom behind closed doors.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, this is about moms, but is it really kind of the same as father? Would it be helpful, the book, be to somebody who had an abusive father?
Yes, I think it could help either gender on that. I think a father or a mother, any parental abuse where there's been a constant abuse problem and an abuse victim and an abuser can be helped with this book because I address both sides of the equation here. One of the statistics I'd like to bring forward is that a study was done that shows that those who've been abused as children are 1,000 times more likely to abuse as adults.
Wow.
So it's difficult for them because that has been their history and that has been their norm. They need help.
Do you think children just continually hold on to hope? I mean, what makes them stay there? I mean, I know it's pretty hard to leave.
Say that again because it broke up on me.
do they hold on to hope continually? Do they think, do they always believe that someday their parents are going to love them and be a better person?
You know, I think hope doesn't die for most of these young people that are abused. They keep wanting mom to be the loving mother, and so they hang on to this thread that it can happen. And I know with Charles Rice, he hung on to that thread, and then eventually this mother came back in his adult life and needed his help. And he was leery, but he went ahead and began to help her again. And that, again, turned out to be a wrong thing in the end, but there was a period of time where he thought things were getting better, and he was excited that they were getting better.
How old was he when that happened?
Oh,
you remember?
Probably in his 50s, maybe 60s.
My goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, it took that long. Up until then, she not only hated him, verbally hated him, abused him, stalked him, did anything in her power to tell him he was a no good child.
I just,
even though
that's
he had grown
so
up,
hard to understand.
Many, many things were very difficult for him to handle, and then still he didn't. He still hung on to some hope that there could be change. And in releasing his story, he was able to see the pieces of that story and realize it was time to let go.
Hey, how close do you come to his words and his story in this book?
I'm very close to his words. The book is kind of in two pieces. It's one book, but all of the italicized words are Charles Rice's story.
Wow.
So they are in there, and what I do is I break into that story from time to time in each chapter to tell a breakdown of what should or should not be happening, what is happening, what kind of damage is being done, and how an outsider can even help. I break into the story to give hope to those who are being abused and leave a possibility of change to the abuser. There's change possible for both abuser and abused.
You know, was this book harder to write than your others? Because those
this
haven't
book
been.
Was really
they've
hard
been personal,
for me to write,
but
the story is really a heavy story in many ways.
But the
problem is, it's very raw and it's very real. And so I knew it needed to come forward. I knew this is the reality that a lot of people live with, and.
Yeah.
It's kept them from realizing they have value, from realizing they are a child of worth in the eyes of the God that created them. They don't know they are deeply loved for just being who they are. They have grown up knowing they weren't loved by their moms.
Can we do a bit of a spoiler here? And can you think of one incident in the story that you could relate to readers that, because I know they're sitting there thinking, well, you know, wonder what did she do that was so awful? Can you think of a specific?
Well, let
or
me
not.
Take you to one. Well, no, well, I could just, there's so
no,
many
No, I
of
know
them
you can.
Here.
Yeah, I know there are.
Okay, so here is one specific. He's grown up. This is the final battle. He's grown up. It's the worst and final battle took place. He's finished high school. He's a tail end of work. He'd been working in a sawmill. Now he started. They have to develop a plan to be out of the house more than they're in the house. So a paper route early came his way. He went to work for another person. He started working, and then his mom expected him to pay the bills even. So more abuse. So
how old was he when she wanted him to pay the bills?
Oh, a teenager. But he was able to still secretly stash away some money, so he had himself some money. So there's tips on how to be able to get away. If you're in an abusive situation, you need to smartly think ahead and find advocates who can come alongside of you and help you get away. But 2 months after his 20th birthday, the worst and final battle took place, and it was all because of those fish tanks. His mom had picked up a habit of having fish tanks. And it was the tail end of the second week of June. At 6:30 a.m., we were both up, and she was just about ready to head out the door to school, and I was getting ready to make something to eat and then watch TV. Well, Mother Dear really screwed up my plans. Hey, it was Friday, no school. The mill was down for some repairs and wouldn't be running until the next week. So I had some unexpected extra time to burn. Being Friday, it was also payday. soon as she left, I went and picked up my check and came back home. What my mother had demanded, she didn't ask, was that I clean all the fish tanks and have all of them cleaned by the time she got home, or there would be hell to pay. Why me? Why did I have to clean all of them today? Remember, there were 35 tanks. Some were huge. Well, I got 9 small tanks cleaned before the banks opened, stopped only long enough to run 2 blocks down the street and cash my check. This check was totally free and clear, and I thought tonight I would take my girlfriend out to dinner, a movie, and maybe go park on the beach for a couple of hours. I got back from the bank and back to cleaning fish tanks. I was doing a total strip clean and sterilize of all the tanks, so it took lots of hot water. I did the 100-gallon tank first, then the 50-gallon tanks. By the time I got done, I was out of hot water and had to wait for the water heater to recover. By 4:15, I had only 4 10-gallon tanks left to clean. But I was out of hot water again, so I cleaned up the kitchen, drain boards, hung up the towels and I had been using. I hung a large bath towel I had been setting the tanks on as I dried them over a chair. 20 minutes later, there was enough hot water for a really quick shower. With that done, I put on some of my good clothes, a nice western shirt, Levi's, and my boots. Called Mary and asked her if she was busy and if she'd like to go out. Okay, plans were made. Mother dear came in just a little after 5, and first thing she said was, "Where are you all dressed up to go?" I told her. Next, she wanted to know if the tanks were done. I told her I only had 4 to go, and I was out of hot water. I also added I would finish them the next day. That didn't seem like an unusual thing. She slammed her books down on the table, started screaming at me. She demanded that I get them done now, that I wasn't going anywhere until the tanks were done. I again repeated that the next day was Saturday and I'd finish them. She screamed, "You'll do them now, mister." I had worked on those tanks for 11 and a half hours. For one day, that was more than enough, and I told her so. She growled, "You little MF, I'll teach you to argue with me." With that, she headed for her room and came back with the belt. She swung it at me. Without even thinking, I grabbed it, jerked it out of her hand, went to the silverware drawer, pulled out a butcher knife. Within a heartbeat, I had cut that belt into 4 tiny little pieces. "Let's see you do something with that belt now, you maniac," I said. She actually turned purple. She let out a scream, looked around the kitchen, reached up on the windowsill, and grabbed one of my decorative decanter bottles, the bottles I had collected. She took the bottle by the neck, and before I could react, she spun on her heel and swung the bottle at me, hit me right square in the middle of my lower lip. Blood immediately flew all over the place. She laid my lower lip open with the bottom of the bottle. I let out a howl of pain you could have heard from near a block away and called her about 15 very insulting names. I was now totally on remote control or autopilot. I grabbed the bath towel off the back of the chair, blood pouring down from the front of my $40 western shirt, went out the door to my car. My car was a typical hot rod, 57 Ford station wagon with a transplanted 400-horse engine, nose down, tail up hot rod, capable of an easy 140 miles an hour on the freeway. All the while, Mother was screaming, "Get back here, I'll call the police on you." I hollered, "Go ahead, I don't care, they'll never catch me in this car." Got in, fired it up, smoked out of the driveway into the street, down the block, and was gone. All the while, the towel I was holding was getting more and more soaked in blood, ruining the original snowball white fabric. It was beginning to look like it was tie-dyed in blood. I maintained about 105 miles an hour all the way to the freeway back to Fortuna. Where were the cops? Not a one in sight anywhere. Annie shows up at his girlfriend's house. Shock began settling in on him from the loss of blood. He took a shortcut through the south end of Fortuna to Mary's house, the only place I could clearly think of going. I came sliding into her driveway at 50 miles an hour, and the dust flew. Almost hit Mary's dad's car. Anyway, it made enough commotion sliding into the driveway that everyone came flying out the door. Her dad was the first one to see the car. All I could say was, "Hide the car, hide my car, I don't want my mother to find it." Oh, okay, so that's part of what's going on here.
Before he makes his total break, I'm almost in tears
reading it again, and I can't believe I put this in. Anyway, it's a real story with a real, real trauma.
And, you know, he sounds like really, really messed up himself. I mean, very disrespectful to his mother, but of course, yes.
He's learning the behaviors.
The question I have is, how does he get over that trauma and get to be normal? Is that possible, and does your book help with that?
The book will help with that. At one point, he was invited to church by the girlfriend prior to this final blow. What's interesting is how long he stuck around home knowing he would be abused over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, that was 20 years old. That's amazing.
That's his norm. He was 20 by the time he broke away. And he was not, out of there yet because he felt he had to somehow stick around. That was what his, he was still pleasing the mother in that way, and it was all wrong. But he ends up finding advocates, and the entire book, because his girlfriend invited him to church at one point during his high school years, her family had parents who loved her, and he could see they were different than his parent.
Yeah.
Because of this, he was able to have some conversations with one of the preachers, and he developed a faith. But then his mother, he had a crisis of belief because his mother tore up his entire record collection in his room and busted everything up, and that made him think God wasn't looking after him yet. But when I've got these two pieces in here, one for the abused, which is reach for fresh joy. You choose that, but God has a way of restoring the broken, and he can restore people like Charles Rice who've been abused, and he can restore people like Charles' mother who was the abuser. And the reach for fresh hope is for the abuser, for them to start looking at what they've accomplished with their actions, why maybe they possibly were abused themselves in their childhood. We don't know that.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they are abusing their children and don't have to continue to do that.
And so Matthew, it sounds to me, like even women who are abused, who may or may not have been abused as children, but are being abused as adults, it sounds like they can learn from this too and learn how to take courage.
Yes. It's like anyone that's being abused could probably be helped by this. Start telling your story. Start letting it out.
Sure.
Start working. These are kind of like little short workbook sections that are included here with lines to write on. You can make it your own personal journey to freedom. Because you want to learn to let go. You want to grasp hold of the God who loves you the most, the one who's created you. I mean, it's really a powerful story and one you can move forward with. At the back of this book, I've got the Proverbs 31 in here where it talks about what God says a woman should be or was created to be. Now, we're all going to have trouble living up to the Proverbs 31 woman, even those of us who don't abuse our children. God's design for a woman is to be a wife of noble character. Her children are to rise up and call her blessed. Well, they won't do that if you abuse. How can they? But you don't have to keep abusing. You can go back. You can seek retribution. You can seek reconciliation and be sincere in doing so and recognize that you've harmed your child. And the abuser doesn't have to stay the abuser. There's a terrible wrong because of a generational cycle that is attached to child abuse. The abused will repeat abuse in most cases.
Yeah.
There's a lot of abuse that happens because you don't know any other way to live. But there are ways to live. God has a wonderful plan for you, and he loves you with an everlasting love.
Well, Maxine, it's been wonderful, and I hate to say it, but we are about out of time. We've been talking to Maxine listeners. You've listened to her before. Now you know about her new book, which is Mother's Fury, Releasing the Trauma of Childhood Abuse. Can you tell them how to get your book, Max?
Well, if you want to go to my website, which is rebuildingfamilies.net, you can find a link under the books column there that will take you to either Ellicor Media, Ellicor Publishing, who has published this book, or over to Amazon. You can find it in either place, and I would be happy to hear from you. You can find a contact button also at rebuildingfamilies.net. So God bless you. It's $14.99 and well worth the helps that you can find to help yourself or a family member. And if you even suspect someone in the neighborhood who's being abused, come forward. There are agencies. There's helps in this book, too, to lead you to agencies that can help you as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Maxine, and we'll talk to you next Monday again.
Thank you, Jeannie. I've enjoyed the show.
I've loved it. Thank you. Bye.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at the river. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.